This is the Inland Journal. I'm Doug Nadvornik. I'm holding in my hands right now the package of information that my accountant sends me every year as we prepare to do my taxes. I haven't dug into it yet, but given the previous coverage about the new federal tax law and the changes that have been made, I'm wondering what I'm in for. And I'm assuming that many of you are thinking the same thing. And what's the that's the motivation behind today's program. How will the new changes in the federal tax system trickle down to individuals and businesses this year? Or are most of the changes that were made coming this year are coming into next year or the year after? Here in the studio with us are Paul Frucci and Daria Brown from the financial firm Frucci & Associates, here to tell us what they know and to take your questions. You can email those questions to inlandjournal@kpbx.org or call 328-5877. Note that's a different number than we usually say on the radio. It's 328-5877. Jump in early. I'm hoping we'll be able to take calls most of the hour. And if you're not able to hear the whole program, we'll post it online later this afternoon. So we welcome Paul and Daria. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us, Doug.
Thank you, Doug.
So the president signed the new tax changes at the end of the year, and that's given you a whole lot of time to get prepared for tax season. So tell us a little bit about how you've been preparing for this now that people can now file their taxes.
On my end, it's been mostly just fielding questions on the new tax law and how it really will affect them in 2018, not necessarily the 2017 tax year. Most items are changing in 2018, so we are getting a lot of calls on that.
So just very quickly, are we in the 2018 tax year or the 2017 tax year?
We'll be filing for the 2017 right now.
Okay.
But most of the laws changing affect the tax year 2018. There's a couple that are retroactive, but most of them.
So if we refer to 2017, you're referring to people filing this year for last year's
Correct.
Income and expenses and all that.
That's right. When this was all being talked about, different versions of the law were being discussed, and I think that caused a lot of confusion. I know that I had to give a talk to a group, and at that time the House version was out, the first version. And so that's what we talked about. But very quickly, the different versions going back and forth caused a lot of confusion about things that disappeared and so forth. And in fact, I think there's a lot of leftover confusion about that.
So Daria, you referred to the questions that you've been getting. So what categories do they fall into then?
All different categories. Some are surrounding businesses. Some are surrounding the individual. For example, what's one of the main questions you've received, Paul?
I've gotten a lot of questions from business owners, and because there's been a lot of talk about the low rate, the new 21% rate for corporations, the effect of that for people that aren't that type of a corporation are pretty complicated. And so we're trying to build models right now to make an analysis. They want to know if they should switch what kind of entity they are or what kinds of moves they should make and so forth. And that's been a little bit challenging because we don't have the tools really to make that analysis.
So is it true that yesterday was essentially the first day you could file your taxes with the IRS or using one of the systems? Is that true?
Yes, the first day for e-filing.
Is that a much later than normal start?
Seems to be quite a bit later, actually. The last couple of years, they've been pushing to a later date. But it used to be a few years ago, you filed right away, right early in January. You could e-file your returns and get your refunds.
So how does that affect as I'm assuming April 15th is the date again, the filing date, is that correct? Or did they move
Yes.
that back given that there's some extra, it's a later starting date?
No, they didn't change the ending date.
Well, yeah, and when it falls on a weekend, they will extend it the one day. So it will be the 16th, but it's usually the 15th unless it falls on a weekend.
So I'm curious, does that compress things for you as tax filers for folks?
Not really. We have returns that are done. They're just waiting to be e-filed already. So now starting today, they're they're going into the IRS.
Okay, so it's not like you're going to end up working even longer hours than you usually do over the next 2.5 months.
No, no.
I think we just live at the firm during this period of time.
Yeah.
Another popular question that I've been receiving is, how is this going to save me money? Because a lot of people are hearing that, well, that's what it was pushed through for. And one of the ways it will save is all the tax brackets were reduced, and except for the 10% bracket. So if you're in that bracket, that's
the lowest.
Yeah, that one remains the same. But the rest of them, it's about 2 to 3% savings in the tax brackets there.
Okay, so I guess the big thing for most of us is that standard deduction goes up, and you've got the question of, do I file, do I itemize, or do I not itemize? And so what are some of the things that you're talking with your clients about?
I think it always just depends on their situation, what they have, what their assets are, what their deductions are. So we kind of run the analysis for each client.
So let's talk about the specifics of the standard deduction. It's gone up from what to what?
So the new levels, for single, it's $12,000, head of household, $18,000, and $24,000 for married filing joint. Those numbers are up from $6,500 single, $9,550 head of household, and $13,000 married filing joint. So that's quite an increase from what it was before. They did do away with the exemptions, though. So those are no longer available.
For example, what exemptions?
So you would receive a personal exemption for each dependent that you had in your tax return, and it was going to be $4,150 per person for 2018, but those are no longer available. But the standard deduction did go up, and then they also increased the child tax credit, I believe, to kind of make up for that difference.
So let's talk about some of those other deductions. I have somebody who has written in to say, please explain medical deductions and when it's worthwhile to take advantage of that.
You know, that was one of the confusions from the first draft, where medical deductions were eliminated completely, which would have been really hard on a lot of people, I think. But in the end, it pretty much stays the same, actually maybe a little better. For the next 2 years, it's back to 7.5%, anything above 7.5% of your income, you can take as a medical expense. So it really is a little bit better than it was before, where we had a 10% limit for some people.
So does that benefit people who have a lot of medical expenses?
It of course, benefits people that have a lot of medical expenses. One of the things I think is real important is that you have a lot of elderly people that are in assisted living, and sometimes they have to take out retirement plan money to pay for it. And if they had eliminated that deduction, they would have been already in bad shape, having to pay tax on that retirement plan money and no deduction. So it was good that they left that in. I think that would have been a really hard thing for a lot of people. That's really where you see a lot of medical deductions, is with the elderly, parents and spouses in assisted living facilities.
So we hear that a lot of these things, for individuals anyway, are good through 2025. Is that one of those that will expire at 2025 if it's not reauthorized somewhere along the way?
Well, that's yes. Those minor changes. There was very little change to medical expense, so
that doesn't necessarily fall under that.
That's right.
Okay.
Some of the other ones, like taxes, where there's a lid on it, that lid could go away in 2025.
We're talking with Daria Brown and Paul Frucci from Frucci & Associates, talking about taxes. If you have a question about how this might affect you, as we're in tax filing season now, 328-5877, or you can send questions to inlandjournal@kpbx.org. Another question from somebody on our Facebook page. I've been reading and trying to glean information to plan what I will do in response. Do you have recommendation about a resource, a website or a publication or something that breaks a lot of this into lists or graphs so that she can read it or see it easily?
There's probably more and more information available to the public. Actually, Google is a good source. And especially if you want something authoritative, you can ask a question and put IRS behind it. A lot of times it will pull up some really good IRS publications on that. So I think that's probably one of the best online ways to get answers.
IRS website, do you like it?
Yeah. The IRS website is sometimes very good. And it's gotten better and better in terms of finding things.
Is it staying up to date with a lot of these changes just sort of taking effect now?
I think there's an information lag maybe with all information sources, including the IRS. But they've actually done a pretty good job of putting out information. And the congressional summaries of the laws are pretty good. So there's the actual law, which is almost unintelligible if you were to read it. And then there's an explanation that goes along with it.
I'm curious. Reading legal briefs or doctor's things. Do you read these things easily, or are you confused by some of that?
There's so much that refers to sections of the law almost within a paragraph. There could be many references to different sections of the law that to really understand that you'd have to stop and look at that section of the law, which leads you into other sections.
Okay, let's start with... I think this is Andrea. Hi, Andrea. You're on with Paul and with Daria.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So my question for you, you were just talking a little bit about how the tax law could have affected the elderly. And my mother's in an assisted living facility. How is this tax law going to affect her?
Well, thanks, Daria. That was something that we did cover a little bit. And that's basically there's been no change to that. So she's going to have about the same situation that she had last year.
Oh, perfect.
Okay.
All right. Thanks so much.
Well, that was an easy one. 328-5877 is the phone number, or inlandjournal@kpbx.com. .org. From Forbes, new W-4s are being redesigned. Those are related to the forms that are withholding. Employers are having to make changes on withholding on their employees. Is that correct? And what sorts of changes?
So those forms are still in process. And so you can still use the 2017 forms right now. And they did come out with the new withholding tables about a week ago that you can go base your decisions off of.
So does this mean that the average employee should be thinking about revisiting their withholding and, you know, am I going to have to make changes? Am I have to worry about whether or not more is being withheld or less is being withheld?
I think what's going to happen if they use the same exemptions that they did for last year, the same information, they're actually going to have less withheld due to the new tax rates.
Okay. So you say that the W-4s are being... When will they be available, for people to...
I haven't heard. I just had gone on Friday to pull the new one, and it wasn't out yet.
You know, under the old law, you had exemptions for yourself and your wife and your children. And that exemption format was used for people that had a lot of taxes or interest on their house. So they would fill out a W-4 form that would say, married, 10 exemptions. And that would be to cover so that they wouldn't have way too much withheld. Now, the W-4 form that we have now has a place to add more withholding, but it doesn't have a system of subtracting withholding anymore. So I think that's going to be an issue. I don't know if the IRS's new form will allow them to take less withholding or not.
Another question from our Facebook page, and you can leave comments on the Spokane Public Radio Facebook page or send them into inlandjournal@kpbx.org. What changes were made that will affect college students, either graduates or undergraduates, those paying student loans? What about interest rates on loans, tuition tax credits, et cetera? She says she has had a hard time keeping up with all the versions they were trying to pass. So what about students?
So the two education credits that were available are still available. Nothing has changed in that area. Since she's a graduate student, she would need to use a lifetime learning credit, which is available essentially your lifetime, which you can claim up to $2,000 per eligible student per year. The student loan interest deduction did not change with the new tax law, so the taxpayer would still be able to deduct that portion.
Okay. Another question with the doubling of the standard deduction. We've talked about the itemizing medical expenses, also charitable donations and educational expenses. What about those?
So charitable donations pretty much haven't changed for most people. They're what they were before. Educational expenses, though, for employees have changed, where in 2018, employee business expenses, including educational expenses and things like tax preparation, are no longer allowed as a deduction. So,
okay.
So also a change on educational 529 plans. This is a great change. They now allow up to $10,000 per student per year to use for K through 12 education. And this is the first year that that has been allowed.
Okay. Email question from Stella. How do the changes impact micro business owners and solo entrepreneurs? This goes to the pass-through business.
Yes, it does. So the small business owner, the smaller business owner, are typically proprietors or partnerships, sometimes S corporations. There's a 40%, I'm sorry, a 20% deduction. So if you make $100,000, there's a $20,000 deduction that comes off of your taxable income, effectively lowering your tax rate. So that seems pretty simple, but actually there's a lot of complication to it in terms of certain types of businesses don't get it. They have to, if you make too much money, then it's limited in different ways and so forth. And that's part of the confusion and the challenge that we have right now is that we're trying to build models to analyze that. One thing I guess is for sure is that probably you'll pay less tax as a business owner. Probably.
That comes down to the individual business case,
right? That's
right.
Yeah. That's right.
328-5877. If you have questions for Daria and Paul, you can also send them in to inlandjournal@kpbx.org or our Facebook page. Mortgage deductions. Whom does this affect the most?
Well, this really affects the acquisition debt for mortgage holders of new debt of $750,000 or less. The past rule was you could deduct interest from acquisition debt of $1 million, and the first law changes they were discussing was going to drop that to $500,000, but they came back up in the final rulings to be at $750,000, and those are for new loans after December 15th, 2017. So you can still deduct mortgage interest on your first and second homes, but again, the total acquisition debt on new loans can't go over that $750,000 threshold.
So that would seem to affect the folks who have the highest sort of mortgages or valuations of their homes?
Correct. And home equity debt is no longer deductible on Schedule A as a deduction. But if you do use home equity debt to fund your small business, your rental property, or your farm, you can actually still use that interest as a deduction on those forms. So you can still take it if that's what that debt is for.
Daria, there's another, that home equity debt can be deducted for acquisition type things like remodeling and so forth.
Yeah.
But a lot of people use home equity to fund other things, buy a boat or maybe take a vacation or just cover spending, personal spending. And that's where what they're trying to block and limit it to home just acquisition.
Let's go to Vince, who has a question about deductions for children. Hi, you're on the radio with Daria and Paul.
Thank you for your time.
Sure.
Yeah, the question I have is, I know they've removed the deductions for children, but I have an adult on development disabled child who's an adult that lives with us who cannot work or live on his own. And I know in the past we've been able to use him as a deduction. Has that changed also like children?
So the exemptions are no longer available, but they have just started where the child tax credit also includes a $500 credit for other dependents who don't qualify as an under age 17 dependent. So there still is a credit, but it's not as large as it was before.
Vince, okay, thank you very much.
Vince, one other thing I think is that if you have a child that's handicapped, you still get the medical deductions related to that dependent.
Appreciate that, Vince. 328-5877. We're with Daria Brown and Paul Frucci from Frucci and Associates. I was going to ask the question regarding some folks have rental properties that they've been able to write off improvements to their properties. Does this change that any? Are there any changes to those deductions?
So these changes that we've talked about are itemized deductions. If you have rental property, the same deductions are available to you. The interest, taxes, all the insurance and repairs, the same things that were deductible in the past.
And for commercial real property, there's actually an increase in Section 179 deducting for items like roofs, heating, ventilation, air conditioning. So items that you weren't able to just write off in the current year if you had the income, now you would be able to on just commercial property, so non-residential.
So there's still incentives to improve properties in there.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, another question. State and local taxes. Folks in high-tax states such as New York and California had worried they wouldn't be able to write off as much. Washington's not quite in that situation, or Idaho. What about those?
Well, we've seen actually a lot of Washington residents are hitting that limit. The limit's $10,000 now. And so in Washington State, you have people that have... you have real estate taxes on your house. You have sales taxes on large purchases, and so it doesn't take too much to get up to $7,000-$8,000 if you have a lake place or something like that. More real estate taxes, or ski condo. So we're seeing people that have, you know, it's not unusual to see $12,000-$15,000. Those people are going to be cut back for tax deductions to $10,000.
What was the limit before?
Well, there was no limit.
There
before.
Was no limit.
Yeah.
Okay,
there was something called alternative minimum tax that would also often hit when you had a lot of real estate taxes or state income taxes, and that's been changed a little bit. And then you may not hit it because you can only take $10,000 now. So
how do you think that's going to affect the way people spend?
I don't think it will affect the way people spend. I think people that want lake places are still going to have them.
Or big ticket items like cars.
Yep, those are things you pretty much have to have when you need them or you want them, right?
Yeah. So 328-5877, or you can send your questions into inlandjournal@kpbx.org. Obamacare penalty for no longer having health insurance, does that take effect this year?
No, that'll become zero in 2019. So it's still in effect for 2018.
So that means if you don't have insurance now, you're still subject to paying the penalty then?
Correct.
That's right.
We talked about the pass-through business deductions and the alternative minimum tax. Remind us again what the alternative minimum tax is.
Well, back in the early 1990s, or a little bit before that, Reagan was talking about a flat tax. So instead of putting a flat tax in, they put a flat tax in addition to the regular tax. So you had these two tax systems working. And people would be hit oftentimes by surprise with this second tax. So they would be paying thousands of dollars extra. Typically, if you had additional taxes or you had employee business expenses, as you added them on to your itemized deductions, your tax stayed exactly the same. It was computed to sort of block you from taking those extra deductions. It's been kind of an annoyance, a politically unpopular tax, but I think for budgetary reasons, they've kind of left it in there. So that alternative minimum tax, they've made it so it hits a lot less often, so it's going to hit people in higher income situations or higher deduction situations, but not as much the average person. So,
and we were hoping it would just disappear, but on the corporate side, it did. They did repeal the AMT for corporations, so that was a good move.
So that means for corporations, what?
They no longer are subject to the AMT tax starting in 2018.
Another email question from Stella, and she wrote into inlandjournal@kpbx.org. How do changes impact military service members and their family? Can they still deduct moving expenses?
So unfortunately, moving expenses were one of those items that got cut, except for military individuals. So a lot of times they're already reimbursed, but anything above the reimbursements, they will be able to take as moving expenses. But they are the only group that can now, starting in 2018.
Now, Stella has touched upon some other deductions that didn't survive, and I've got a list here. I'll just casualty and theft losses. What about some of those? Did you have people who, clients who would, you know, declare those very often, or is that one of those that's just really rare and therefore no longer still on the books?
We had a few. I think the latest one I did was a fire that had. They had a fire at their home. Their insurance only covered a portion of it, and so they were able to take the balance as a deduction. And that's no longer available starting in 2018 unless it's a presidentially declared disaster area.
Unreimbursed employee expenses. What are those?
That's something that's I think is a little bit of a. It's too bad that that's gone, because businesses a person that's a. Let's say he's a manufacturer's rep and he's on commission, he's not an employee, he can take his travel expenses and his hotel and so forth. But if you're an employee and you're under the same rules and you have to cover your expenses, there's a lot of high income people that have that situation. Starting in 2018, those employee business expenses are not deductible at all. So that's going to be a tax increase for those people. A little bit at odds with if they were treated a little differently like an independent contractor, they would be able to take those expenses.
Tax preparation expenses go away. You can't write off hiring your accountant.
I know. That's really unfortunate. But it's such a valuable thing to pay for that probably most people will still not object to that. But
You don't think you're going to lose a lot of business from that?
Well, there will probably be some complaining about it for sure. Yeah.
Other miscellaneous deductions previously subject, and I'm reading this, I think this was from Forbes, subject to the 2% AGI cap. What is the AGI cap?
That 2% has to do with the investment expenses that you can take off as an itemized deduction, the employee business expenses. Those were all subject to that 2% cap.
And then employer-subsidized parking and transportation reimbursement. Is that a big deal?
Probably not.
Well, I think the only one that really changed was they no longer allow the $20 a month bike deduction there. So that was
okay for those of us who aren't bicyclists. Yes. What was the?
I don't think there was any other changes. Businesses can still reimburse for other expenses there.
There are some businesses, I worked for one, a university that would buy bus passes for its employees. Are those affected in any way?
I don't think those are affected. Do you know?
I'm not aware that is. Yeah.
Okay. 328-5877 if you have a question for Daria Brown or for Paul Frucci. We're here till the top of the hour, or you can send your questions into inlandjournal@kpbx.org. So what about we talked about this, deduction for teachers who buy classroom supplies with their own money.
And they retain that, $250 they can deduct. A lot of teachers do spend out of pocket. So
yes, my husband is a school teacher, and he spends a lot more than $250. So he was able to take the rest as an employee business expense, but he'll no longer be able to do that.
Okay. The standard line is that this will lead to big savings for people who make a lot of money. What about people who are at that lower end of the scale? Is that a big change for them, or are anybody going to see increases this year with the new taxes?
I think there will be people that see big increases, depending on their circumstances. For example, I know that in justifying the benefits to the people that are at the bottom end, they talk about how the standard deduction has been doubled. But the standard deduction, going $10,000 more, when you lose yourself and your wife and one child, you're already behind on that. So the exemption elimination oftentimes is going to take care of that. So if you have a number of children, two or three children that you're deducting, then you're behind right there, and by $4,150 per child. So that's just one example. People that have a lot of they work out of state and they pay taxes in the other state, and then now they're cut back to $10,000. They could have an increase. So I think that the press talks about averages, the government statistics talk about averages, and I think that's probably the only way they can explain it. But when you implement the rules, I think people are going to, in funny situations, are going to get caught either saving a lot of money or maybe paying a lot more money. So,
what about people who've been on unemployment for some or all of the year? Will they be affected at all?
I think most of them would fall probably under that 10% bracket. I don't see them being affected too
the
much.
10% that stays the same, that 10% bracket.
Same. Yeah.
So how I was looking at the six other areas. What's kind of the standard decrease in the percentage rate that goes down? Do you sort of have that off the top of your head? 15?
It's about 3.
15 goes down to 12.
Yeah, it's about 3%. Yeah. Difference. So in other words, and the brackets are broader. So sometimes, if you make 12%, you're not going to hit 22% until higher up. So you're kind of saving twice there if you're in the right situation. So,
are these changes permanent in future years? Or are they going to change from year to year? Is there an inflation sort of built in to all of those?
I think there is inflation in the rate. In the rate or the brackets, I think, maybe.
Yeah, not in the actual tax rate. So the 10%, 12%,
stay the same. Yeah. Do you think I was thinking, because I've done my own taxes in years past, and then we bought a rental house, and I have hired an accountant, and I start to think now, if the standard deduction is going to be greater, do I need to pay you to be able to do this? How would you counsel folks who may have that same sort of question?
Well, I think if a taxpayer is only going to their accountant because they itemize their deductions, then if it was my client, I would just suggest that they call me and say, hey, am I going to be able to itemize this year? And if I said no, you won't be able to, and they just have a W-2 and they're comfortable with that, then they probably can do their own tax return, really, and they don't need to pay somebody to do it. So I think that's where things are going to be simpler for people. People that are maybe have salary, they don't have a rental, and they're not going to itemize. So I think you could even call the IRS and file your tax return by phone and plug some numbers in, and you can get a refund that way. So
okay.
And I think when you have a rental property, it's a good idea to get some sort of advice. Also, that new 20% deduction for businesses applies to rental property. So that's another area that you might want somebody to take a look at.
Okay. So we have Rex from Osborne, Idaho, on the line to ask about Social Security and disability, I believe. Hi, Rex. You're on the radio with Daria and Paul.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call. Sure. I'm very appreciative. I'm curious as to know, I have not been filing income tax returns because apparently, I guess it's not required. I've been told repeatedly that it's not required. My Social Security disability income is under $20,000 a year. It's about $1,400 and plus dollars a month. And I'm curious, is that going to change in the new structure, so to speak?
Rex, that's not going to change. That income is not taxable, and you don't have to file a return if that's all you have.
And that's the only income I have. I guess I'm curious, does Idaho Medicaid qualification health insurance change that any, or change the structure by which that income is either deductible or becomes a burden, so to speak? I mean, I'm just wondering, because that's another issue that's come up for me recently.
Well, the state of Idaho, most of the western states just follow the federal format and kind of piggyback off of it. And so if you don't have to file your federal return, I think you should be fine for Idaho purposes too.
Boy, that's music to my ears. I'm certainly hopeful that it'll remain that way. I sure appreciate you taking my call today.
328-5877 or inlandjournal@kpbx.org. Question from Pete on email. Are U.S. citizens permanently living abroad still required to file a U.S. tax return?
Well, U.S. citizens living abroad are required to file tax returns. You're taxed on your worldwide income. I don't think there's been any changes, as there that I'm aware of. And sometimes, depending on whether you come home to the United States or not, you have you can earn a certain amount and not pay any tax. So I think I guess the short answer is you still have to file a tax return here in the U.S.
So I guess the larger question there, the whole idea of this, one of the ideas behind this was to try to get those American companies that have moved their money offshore to try to get them to bring it back to the U.S. Does this law do that? And how does it do that?
I think one of the main ways they try to do that is just lowering the C corporation tax rate from, at the highest point, it was 35%, and now it's a flat rate of 21%. And I think that was really pushed in order to get all those companies to come back.
All right, 328-5877. We've got one or two folks that are calling in right now, so we'll hope to get them on the radio here pretty quick. Daria Brown and Paul Frucci from Frucci & Associates. This is the second day that you can now do your e-filing with the IRS. So let's go to Janice on line two. Janice, you're on with Daria and Paul.
I just have a question. I'm 69. I'm going to turn 70 next year. I was wondering if there's any changes in that RMD.
No, there's no changes in the RMD. It's the year you're 70 and a half, Janice. Mm-hmm. So if your birthday falls before June, that's the year that you have to take your required distribution from your retirement plans.
Okay, I was just hoping that maybe the percentages would be different, but they're not, huh? Okay.
No, they're not.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for the call, Janice. 328-5877 or inlandjournal@kpbx.org. So as I recall, you said this year was the April 16th or April 17th, because I think the 15th falls on a weekend. Is that what you're...
Yeah, I think Monday is the 16th this year.
Let's go to Diana from Sandpoint here. Hi, Diana. You're on with Daria and Paul.
Yes, hello. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I own a small business. I own a small tree farm, an LLC. And right now we don't have income on that. However, we do have expenses. And I'm wondering if there's going to be any changes on expenses for that. It would be against my husband's income.
So if it's a small business, I don't think there's going to be any big changes, except now they're going to limit losses that you can take in 1 year on a business to $500,000 for a married couple. And that's the only... Paul, can you think of any other changes loss side?
No, I think, Diana, I think that's going to work pretty much the way it has in the past. You're going to be able to pretty much take that loss against your husband's income if he has a W-2 income.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. 328-5877. We're hoping to get as many calls as we can here in the next 10 or 12 minutes before we finish the program, or inlandjournal@kpbx.org. So what are some more of the questions that you're getting from folks this early in the process?
Well, a lot of people are wondering what they should do differently. I think that's that happened almost immediately when the law was signed in late December. And there's probably not a lot you can do. A lot of these things are just mathematical, and so they're just going to happen to you.
Are there ways you can prepare for next year when a lot of those changes are going to take effect, things that you can do throughout 2018 you should be thinking about?
Yeah, there probably is. I think things like you mentioned the sales tax on a large purchase and whether that affects your decision to do it. Just being able to deduct the sales tax on, say, a big boat or a new car is probably not a huge advantage. It does help a little bit. So it probably is not going to affect the decision to do it or not do it. I don't know. One of the things we haven't talked about is the kitty tax. And the kitty tax is that a lot of people, as they one of the ways that they used to prepare for their kids' college education is that they would put stocks and bonds and investments in the child's name. And the government tried to block the benefit of that in the tax rules by paying the child would have to pay tax at the parents' rates. Now they've actually made it a little worse. The child has to pay tax at the trust rates, which are usually higher than the parents' rates. So that could be something where there could be some changes in what kind of investment they have or whether they continue to use that strategy.
Okay, let's go back to the phones, 328-5877. We have Brandy from Coeur d'Alene who's on the line. Hi, Brandy. You're on with Daria and Paul.
Hi. How you doing?
We're well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks.
What's your question?
Well, I think you might have addressed this a little bit, but I didn't hear everything. I have a small business. I'm based out of my home. I'm a single member LLC, and I'm wondering if I will still be able to deduct home improvements. I think you mentioned something.
So, Brandy, you're, as a single member LLC, you're what's called a disregarded entity, and you file a Schedule C. Like you're mm-hmm. a proprietor, and you're allowed to take home office expenses because you are working out of your home. So home office expenses include the repairs and maintenance. Sometimes if it's a large repair or remodeling, it affects the depreciation that you can take on your house. And, of course, that deduction is limited to the percentage of your house that's used for businesses. So oftentimes it's an office, but it can be storage areas also.
Okay.
So the other thing that's interesting about an LLC is that you can retroactively convert your LLC into an S corp or a C corp. Those are uh-huh. two different kinds of corporations. The C corp is the one that has the 21% tax rate, and the S corp is the one that has the 20% deduction that lowers your taxes. So those are all possibilities depending on what your profitability is. But those are not necessarily part of the new law, but they're just some things that are available for people that have businesses.
Thank you, Brandy. Appreciate the call in. Let's go now to the Spokane Valley. Anna has a question, I believe, about a service animal. Hi, Anna.
Hi. I'm wondering if I can deduct the expenses for she's a companion animal, not a service animal.
Okay.
But if I can deduct those expenses as well as my medical expenses, because I have pretty substantial amounts due there.
Anna, you can deduct those expenses. Anything, if the service animal or companion animal is prescribed by a physician, then it would qualify as a medical expense. It depends on how you what caused you to get the animal. But if you are using it for medical reasons, then you want to get a prescription for it.
Right.
Okay.
I'm not clear, and I think I probably just missed but are medical expenses deductible this year?
Yes, they're deductible in the same way they have been in the past.
Good.
So, absolutely.
Well, and you actually get a greater deduction this year versus 2019. So for the 17 and 18, you can take medical deductions in excess of 7.5% of your AGI, and it goes back to the 10% in 2019. So this is a good year to take them.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Sounds good. I've got them every year, so that's good news. Thank you.
Okay, Anna, thank you for the call. 328-5877. Still have a few minutes left with Paul Frucci and Daria Brown from Frucci and Associates. Let's go to Winston in Hayden, Idaho. Question about, I believe, a senior deduction. Hi, Winston.
Hello there. My question is that currently, last year and previous years, on the standard deduction, seniors got a little bit of an increase when they did not itemize on the standard deduction, and what do we know about that in the new proposal?
So that's going to remain the same, and it's going to be at the same amounts. So you'll get the standard deduction plus an elderly or blind or both.
Okay, added to that helps a little bit, so I appreciate knowing that.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Winston. Appreciate the call. Again, we have a few minutes at 328-5877, or you can send questions to inlandjournal@kpbx.org. So for folks who have questions, they haven't been able to call in or get near a phone or email, where would you suggest where can they contact you, for example, if they have questions or comments?
Probably our website. That website has access to all of our email addresses, and we field questions all the time from people that call in. So,
do you spend a lot of your time actually physically going through email and answering questions right now?
I think both of us get a lot of emails. I get maybe 70 or 100 emails a day, probably. Some of them are questions from clients, and sometimes non-clients are calling us with questions, and we're happy to talk to people about.
Now, there's always the issue when you come on the radio. You can't give specific stuff unless you see you've got an individual's documents in front of you. But how deeply can you get into questions like that with folks who call you on the phone or do email?
We can get into a lot of. We typically do get into a lot of detail. Then we ask a lot of questions. Sometimes we can't answer the question without going into a lot of detail, and it does open up other items. Like when we were talking about the LLC that Brandy had, you know, how she could change it around and so forth. Sometimes that we answer a different question that's more valuable than the first question, you know, that was actually asked.
Comment from a listener: a woman in Idaho has a friend whose income was low enough they didn't need to file a tax return. They talked to a CPA who offered to file a return for them, and they actually got a refund for food expenses. When your income is low enough that you don't need to file, when should you do it anyway?
So that's a state of Idaho return. There's a grocery credit, what they're talking about. So that's what they filed in order to receive. So they didn't necessarily need to file the federal return, so that was the state of Idaho.
So are there times when you should file a federal but not a state, or not a state and file a federal, or how would you talk about that?
Well, there's another big area, I think, where people sometimes don't have to file, and that's the maybe the earned income credit, too, is sometimes they won't owe any tax, but they actually get huge refunds from the earned income credit, and especially that is a credit that's available for people that don't have high incomes, where they actually get sort of a subsidy from the IRS for having low income. So
was the earned income credit subject to the changes this year?
No, I don't think there's any changes. The earned income credit was left alone. It's kind of a political hot potato. I don't think they wanted to mess with that.
So. That's one you have to apply for in order to be able to receive it, right?
Yes, you have to file a tax return and you have to meet certain qualifications.
Okay, in our last couple of minutes, are there any areas that we've missed in our last 2 or 3 minutes that we needed to touch upon, do you think?
Well, there's one increased business credit that increased a lot from the prior year. It's luxury auto limit. And in the past, it was limited first year to $3,160, and now it went up to $10,000 that first year. Over a five-year period, it's gone where you could only expect $15,000 of that luxury auto, and you can now expense in a five-year period $47,000. And so that's a big change for businesses.
So if you happen to be, does that for folks who might renovate cars, older cars?
No, for if you have a business and you have a car used for in that business. There used to be pretty high limits where you couldn't deduct very much on that vehicle, and now they've really increased those limits where you can.
Okay. So are there areas, do you think, there's been this whole overhaul of the tax code. Are there any things that were left undone that you think might be covered in the future from things that maybe didn't get covered this year, or do you think this is pretty much it?
Well, I think usually there's a lot of technical changes, corrections, things they didn't think of, abuses that come up that they want to fix, clarifications that aren't answered in the rules. One of the areas that we didn't talk about today was the estate and gift tax rules, which that was pretty significant too. It doesn't hit a lot of people, but it used to be that $5 million was per person was not subject to estate tax, and now it's $10 million per person. And a lot of people don't know that Washington State has a state tax of a little over $2 million per person. So a lot of times people aren't subject to a federal tax, but they're subject to the state tax. And that's an area where it's not a bad idea to talk to an estate planning attorney if you're in that situation. And a lot of times you don't do anything, you don't want to do anything to change that, but at least you should find out what you can do and how much money is at stake. So
that's a nice lead into the fact that Spokane Public Radio is working with a group to bring four programs, either in March or April. We haven't finalized the dates yet, to talk about financial planning and other planning for retirement and other planning toward the end of life. And so this originally was to be part of that. We just decided to pull it away and get the program on earlier because it's important. So we want to thank Daria Brown and Paul Frucci for being a part of the program today.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming and offering help.